Selection Retention Committee. It is December 17th, 2021. It is 9:37 a.m. We'll start with Pledge Allegiance. Pledge Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Regard to roll call, everyone on the committee is present and accounted for. We move on to the old business, which will be approval of the November 22nd, 2021, and November 30th, 2021 meeting minutes.
We'll move it together.
I've moved it together, if that's okay.
Move both sets of minutes.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That is approved. Moving on to new business, which is presentation of the findings of the OTC's investigation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you were all delivered a copy of a report last night, either in physical form or electronically. But this report reflects the findings and conclusions that were the investigation that the committee directed us to perform with the Office of General Counsel. To perform. You'll notice that it is actually a joint report. It is signed by both Ms. Wendy Mintloss, who's here with us today as the Executive Director of the Jacksonville Human Rights Commission, as well as Ariel Cook with the Office of General Counsel. And the reason why it's a joint report is because we felt that it would be most expedient or most efficient for both agencies to jointly conduct the investigation. You will notice that there are some findings that are in this report that the Human Rights Commission did not weigh in on because simply the fact that it was outside of their jurisdiction or outside of their purview. So that's the reason why there is a couple of the conclusions that are in here that they took no position on. So as you all know, we're charged pursuant to Section 602.305 of the Ordinance Code to conduct an investigation regarding or to present to you rather the reasons for possible removal of the Inspector General for the City of Jacksonville. And the basis for removal pursuant to Section 305 subparagraph D are the following: neglect of duty, abuse of power or authority, discrimination, or ethical misconduct. And so that was the focus of our investigation into the complaints that were made. Just by way of background and refresh your recollection on this, the city received four separate complaints, where each of the complainants requested whistleblower status. Each of those complainants was granted whistleblower status. However, one of the individuals had previously waived his right to confidentiality under the whistleblower protections that are afforded by both the Ordinance Code and the statutes. And so there is anonymity associated with those, and so the reason that's the reason why we didn't get into anybody's individual's names or anything along those lines. We kept pronouns, were kept as in I guess anonymous fashion as possible. And so, Mr. Chairman, having gone through the report, having been presented with the report, I wanted to get some direction from you in terms of how you think it would be best for us to present that to you. You go through it in a summary fashion, you go through it in more detail. I will say this, that if you do have specific questions, you are and encouraged to be able to ask those specific questions about any specific claims, facts, allegations, anything in that. Ms. Cook it was in each of the investigations, as well as Ms. Mintloss, and they can answer specific questions that you may have regarding any allegations that are made specifically. So with that, I'll look for direction from you, Mr. Chair, as to how you'd like to proceed.
So I think the first thing I'd like to address is that obviously there's a lot of people here outside of this committee who have an interest in what's going on here today. But can we address, because that's going to be a question I'm sure that will come up, the nature of the confidentiality at this stage of proceedings?
Absolutely. Pursuant to Florida statutes, these types of complaints are exempt from disclosure under both the public records laws, as well as I mentioned, the anonymity afforded with a whistleblower complaint. So certain information that are in these complaints, because of the whistleblower status, are and will remain confidential. However, the complaints themselves are exempt from disclosure under the public records law until the committee makes one of two decisions. One is they're unsubstantiated, and therefore the investigation is concluded, or that the person who is the subject of the complaints has received written notification of the allegations that are made against them. Kind of jump ahead a little bit on this. If the committee does decide that any of the allegations are substantiated and justify proceeding on with removal, then the next step would be for you all to issue a charging document, if you will. And we would request, in terms of expediency, we hammer out exactly what it is that you all want to or feel is necessary to charge Ms. Green with, and then delegate authority to the chair to finalize and execute the charging letter. What we anticipate is it's going to be a very simplistic letter that's going to reference the report. You know, for the reasons stated in the report, we hereby charge with discrimination, for example. So that's ultimately what the end result of today would be a determination. Yes or no, is there enough here to substantiate? And if the answer is yes, then exactly what it is that that should be in that charging document. Now, I do want to take the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to kind of explain the process. So how this process works is once you all have concluded your determination as to whether or not a recommendation for removal should go forward, then that will be reduced to the charging document, reduced to writing. That written notification will be provided to Ms. Green. She will have an opportunity to come back before you all and present whatever evidence that she feels is exculpatory or to discount any of the findings or disprove any of the findings that were as part of the OGC investigation. It's not a trial. It's not where witnesses will be presented. It's not, in essence, a prosecution. It's her opportunity to provide whatever evidence. Now, she can present witnesses if she wants to, but it's basically an opportunity for you to receive evidence from her. Okay, and so once that is concluded, then you will decide whether or not to move it forward with an actual hearing in front of the City Council. At that point in time, if you do decide that there is enough there to go before City Council, then all of that will be scheduled with either what we would probably recommend as a committee of the whole, where a hearing will be held. This whole process was patterned and developed after the statutory and constitutional authority of the governor to remove appointed officials. That's a two-step process. The governor conducts an investigation and decides if there's enough to remove an appointed or elected official. If the governor decides, yes, there's enough there, then it's forwarded to the Florida Senate for the hearing. The guidance that we get from case law as to how that has evolved over the years is pretty long-standing. In fact, one of the seminal cases is from 1894. But what it says, though, is that there's no like full-blown trial in front of the City Council. It's just an opportunity to have a hearing. And so your role in this is akin to the governor's role, which is to determine for the, in normal sense, the governor, for the governor's personal belief that there's enough there to justify removal of the elected official. But the actual fact-finding and that kind of thing happens at the legislative branch. So if you think about it in that term, you are sitting kind of in a collective capacity as an executive function to determine, is there enough of a first blush effort to justify removal? And then it goes to that second step. So I wanted to, just so you know where you fit in the process, just to kind of let you all know, that your process is kind of the starting point of all of this. And while we did do the investigation, there is an opportunity for Ms. Green to present any rebuttal evidence that she would like to. This is not intended to be, you know, the end-all, be-all hearing, so to speak, if that makes sense.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions related to what Mr. Teal has talked about?
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Teal, is there, based on you saying that she won't receive official notification unless there's a charging document, so in what detail can we go through this report since it hasn't been given to
you? You can go through it in as much detail as you want to. You know, the only thing is that obviously the identities of the persons protected under whistleblower is kind of still confidential. But this is the forum to discuss this report. And so if you want to get into specific details, you can get into specific details. If you want to keep it more general or more generic, you can keep it more general or generic. It's really up to you. Because right now, your decision is there enough there, you know, to show neglect of duty, abuse of power, authority, discrimination, or ethical misconduct. However you need to get there to explore, you know, the information that's being presented in this report is up to you. You guys can get into as much of the weeds as you want to. I will say this, I apologize, is that we did receive an updated or a final version of one of the witness statements. There wasn't a whole lot of changes to it, but we would like to pass that out to you guys just so you have the final version of it. One of them was unsigned, I believe, and then now it's finalized, and so now it's executed. So, it was a summary, and now it's a statement.
So I do have one additional question. Can you let the committee know what the status of the lawsuit that was filed by Ms. Green is?
Yes, through the chair. So the lawsuit has been filed. OGC has filed a motion to dismiss the complaint. There are two hearings currently set. The hearing on the motion to dismiss is set for January 3rd, and the hearing on the plaintiff's motion for emergency injunction is set for January 7th. And those are both, we're now in front of Judge Sherritt, who I believe is moving over from Clay County.
Anybody have any questions?
We deal, a lot of us deal with standards of proof and levels of proof. In terms of the decision we have to make today based upon your report and findings, is there an established standard?
It's a civil standard, so it's a simple preponderance. So a greater weight of the evidence, in essence. And we did structure our report, you know, that was the standard that we used in evaluating and making our recommendations, is that whether or not the greater weight of the evidence supported a finding or a conclusion.
So, just clarity. So this report, if we go through it, ultimately the potential complaints, unless they've waived an element of confidentiality, will remain confidential through the remainder of the process. But the process today, again, just to reaffirm, is we're looking at your report and simply contemplating the next step of due process to the person that is the subject of the investigation.
Correct. Yeah, the persons that requested anonymity and were granted whistleblower status will remain confidential forever. You know, so even after this process is concluded, those statements might go out, but they'll be redacted. Identifying information would be redacted.
So, has this report gone to Ms. Green or her counsel?
No.
So the forum today is simply us reviewing the report in whatever detail we choose, and determining not simply a preponderance of the evidence presented through the investigation warrants the next stage of her due process.
Correct. I mean, there are a total of 9 allegations that are detailed in this report. You may find that, you know, that all 9 of them are supported. You may find that 5 of the 9 or 1 of the 9 or none of the 9. And so, you know, this is the process for going through those 9 allegations and deciding based upon those nine, what's going to go in that charging letter or charging document.
So the last thing would be a question, it's just taking an opportunity to, based on that, say that from my perspective personally, I'm not intending to suggest everyone is in the same place, but since the person, the subject of the investigation and her counsel have yet to see it, and this is simply an evaluation of us on a report that we've had in our possession, I personally believe that, a higher level of consideration of this report in this public forum is going to guide me, because I think it's a fair, I think the deeper we dive into this report in the public forum, the more information goes out about the subject of the complaint without her or her counsel having had the ability to see it. So that will inform me too.
And Mr. Chairman, I did want to mention, just process-wise, so once the written notification goes out, the charging document goes out to Ms. Green, this report will go with it. And so, and it will become public record at that point in time. So everything that's in our report is going to be released. Like we said, we're not anticipating that the charging document is going to get into a lot of detail, because I think it can reference back to the report. So that's probably... we don't see that there would be an issue with even getting it out before the end of the day today.
Anybody else have any questions? Yes, sir, Tim.
You're kind of anticipating. based on what Brian said, but our previous discussion, what level can we go in terms of the summary of the report that gives her due process, but also for the public standpoint, because they have no clue what's in this report, for them to have an understanding of why we made the decision, not just based on we all thought it was the right thing to do.
Through the chair, like I said, you could go to as much detail as you want. I could literally sit here and read this to you verbatim, and you can stop me and you can interrupt and you can ask questions about, well, tell me how, what was the demeanor of the witness when they said this? Or, why do you think that, based upon, the interview of Ms. Green, that, she was, for example, inconsistent in her testimony. We can talk through nuances. Obviously, this is the report is a summary of, the interview of, of a lot of witnesses. So, so we could, like I said, it would not be out of the norm for me to read through each allegation, everything that we've gotten or each allegation. We could stop, we could discuss, we could ask questions, and then, Mr. Chair, one of two ways. You could either, you're going to have to, in essence, take a vote on each of these allegations. So, you might want to, kind of just a preliminary thing is go through each of them one at a time and then, see if anybody has any questions or any need specific or additional information about any particular allegation, take a vote on it, and then, move on to the next one, however you guys want to do that.
I will say what Mr. Teal has outlined, but my thought process was a general overall, just kind of high level with each specific allegation, and then any specific questions that members of the committee might have, and then that would be my intent, unless people disagree, to individually vote on that allegation and then move on to the next one, and so on and so forth. Anyone have a concern with that?
If I may, I was thinking the same thing. I think if we could just do a general highlight of each one, and then if anybody has any details they need to get into, that's fine. Otherwise, we vote and move on to the next. Yeah.
Looks like the committee agrees. So if we could start with the allegation number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So allegation number one is a hostile work environment. And we might be guided by, you can see kind of the way that we structured our report, is there's a folded section underneath the allegation, and then there are numeric paragraphs with specific assertions that are made. And then we've got a paragraph called evidence in support of those allegations, a paragraph called evidence contradicting the allegations, and finally a conclusion on each allegation. Based upon your guidance, Mr. Chairman, what I'll plan on doing is read the title of the allegation, read the bolded paragraph underneath, which is a kind of a summary about what the allegation's about. And then, if you want, I can just go to the conclusions on the allegation, and then if you have specific questions, we can go from there. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, allegation number one is a hostile work environment. It was alleged that Ms. Green made inappropriate and unwelcome sexual comments in the workplace or to other OIG employees she supervised. The specific allegations include, but are not limited to, the following. We go through a 11 paragraphs after that. The conclusions on allegation one says the greater weight of the evidence shows that Ms. Green made inappropriate sexual comments to and about employees and about herself. Ms. Green's belief that these types of comments were the result of the informal or friendly office environment do not make the comments appropriate. As the IG and as a manager slash supervisor, Ms. Green has a duty to maintain a professional work environment. The evidence shows Ms. Green created and allowed a hostile work environment due to these inappropriate comments, and that this environment generally had a detrimental effect on employees. The JHRC and the Office of General Counsel find that allegation one is substantiated.
All right, with regard to allegation one, does anyone on the committee have any specific questions they'd like to ask OGC?
Not going into details. For city employees at Ms. Green's level, or supervisors or managers, are they provided some kind of document training that aligns how they should be interacting with subordinates on a regular basis, so that way that standard is upheld?
Through the chair. Through the chair. Yes, the employees, including Ms. Green, the employees of the Office of Inspector General, have taken city-provided sexual harassment training on the computer, and we've confirmed that Ms. Green had taken that class prior to the allegations.
Any other questions? All right, do we have any motions as to whether or not there is a belief that allegation one is substantiated?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of OGC and JHRC's conclusion, move allegation one to charge one.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Other comments?
That's what happens when you take it in 9 pieces. 9 public comments.
That's fine. Do we have any public comment related to what's been discussed on allegation one? Seeing none. All right. We have a motion that's been seconded. We have no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, if I can make a comment, just for the people who are watching this process, I think it was mentioned, but I think it needs to be reinforced that all the people up here have earlier been provided a copy of the thorough reports. And so I know I reviewed them last night, we reviewed them this morning. Just wanted the public to understand that there's been a lot of work by each individual commissioner before proceeding on reviewing the substance of the allegations.
That is a good point, Mr. Cooper. Is there anyone on this committee who has not reviewed the report that was provided in advance of this meeting? All right. Everyone has. Okay. Thank you. All right, Mr. Teal, if we could move on to allegation number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allegation number two is discrimination. It was alleged that Ms. Green discriminated against black employees or treated them less favorably than white employees and discriminated on the basis of disability status. Specific allegations include, but are not limited to, the following. There are 13 paragraphs with regard to that. The conclusions on allegation two, the greater weight of the evidence taken together supports a finding that Ms. Green made inappropriate racial comments at work and that she treated black employees less favorably than their white counterparts. Multiple former employees, as well as many current employees, both black and white, corroborated testimony regarding this disparate treatment. Additionally, a white employee openly admitted that she believed she is treated better than her black counterpart because of her race. JHRC and OGC find that allegation 2 is substantiated.
Following the process that we have put in place, any specific questions, Mr. Teal? Mr. Hammond?
Again, not going through the specifics. There was one particular one that caught my eye and I wanted to ask. Based on the testimony that you guys took, is there any legal exposure that the city now holds based on some of the decisions that she may have made?
Through the chair, we don't anticipate any, you know, especially in light of a potential disciplinary action in response to. Once the issue came to light, we investigated it, as we're intending to do. Now, I will say that, you know, there may be some follow-up with regard to the Human Rights Commission or the Ethics Commission or something along those lines. You know, but we don't anticipate any. Obviously, we can't have a crystal ball, but there's nothing that we're aware of at this point in time that may go down that road.
Any other questions? All right, any motions related to allegation number 2?
Mr. Chairman, I move allegation 2 be put forth as charge number 2.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to have a public comment.
Public comment first.
You have to second.
We can move in second.
I'll
then
second.
Then we'll get a public comment.
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? All right, before we vote, since there's no discussion, any public comment related to issue number 2? See no public comment. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. All right, moving on to allegation number 3, Mr. Tim.
Allegation number 3 is retaliation. It was alleged that Ms. Green attempted to terminate an employee, paren, whistleblower number 1, close paren, who filed a whistleblower complaint against her. The specific allegations included but are not limited to the following. There are 4 enumerated paragraphs after that. The conclusions on allegation number 3, while Ms. Green testified that she had made the decision to terminate whistleblower 1 on October 26, 2021, that contention is not supported by any evidence. Because Ms. Green sought feedback regarding whistleblower 1's performance from his subordinates on October 23rd and early on October 29th, I'm sorry, on October 28th and early on October 29th, that indicates she had not formally made a decision. Notably, Ms. Green's own notes show she believed whistleblower 1 was writing the complaint the day before she attempted to fire him slash her. Additionally, Ms. Green did not inform City Labor Relations, whom she asked for assistance regarding whistleblower 1's termination, about the impending complaint. This information almost certainly would have changed the advice provided by Labor Relations. While Ms. Green has the ability to terminate at-will employees for any legal reason, taking adverse action because of a complaint against her is unlawful. Even if Ms. Green did not intend to retaliate, she should have realized the impropriety of moving forward with termination the day after she realized whistleblower 1 was writing a complaint against her. JHRC and the Office of General Counsel find that allegation 3 is substantiated.
Anyone in the committee have any questions related to allegation 3? Questions
or motions? Mr. Chairman, I move allegation 3 be advanced as charge number 3.
All right, we have a motion that has been seconded. Any discussion? Any public comment with regard to allegation number 3? Not see any public comment.
All right, we shall vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Moving on to allegation four.
Allegation four is toxic work environment. It was alleged that Ms. Green conducted herself in a manner that created a toxic work environment for OIG employees. Specific allegations include, but are not limited to, the following. There's seven enumerated paragraphs to support that. The conclusions on allegation four, when reviewing the allegations together, the greater weight of the evidence, and I've been remiss in reading the footnote, but it's the same footnote, which says, while the majority of witnesses interviewed corroborated these allegations, there were two OIG employees who gave statements to OGC that they never witnessed any behavior like that described in this allegation. The greater weight of the evidence, corroborated by multiple former and current employees, demonstrates that Ms. Green behaved in an unprofessional and often erratic manner in the workplace. This behavior created an environment in which employees did not feel comfortable and were distracted from completing their actual job duties because they spent significant time trying to avoid conflict with Ms. Green. Notably, there is substantial evidence that the environment in the office has improved dramatically while Ms. Green has been on administrative leave. OGC finds that Allegation 4 is substantiated. Allegation 4 does not fall within the JHRC's jurisdiction, thus it renders no conclusion.
Any questions in the Allegation 4 to the
panel? No questions. Assuming at some point in litigation that the sentence, notably, there's substantial evidence that the environment in the office has improved dramatically while Ms. Green has been on administrative leave, is there anything within the testimony that was taken before or after that will be able to substantiate that sentence?
Yes, through the chair, there's substantial testimony to that.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir. Odd question, perhaps. Is toxic work environment, is there any legal
through the chair. So the allegation one was hostile work environment, which is a legally recognized cause of action. This is not that, but it's not to say that the allegations included in this allegation four couldn't substantiate a legal claim for hostile work environment. But allegation one here was based on the sexual comment, and this allegation goes beyond that to kind of a larger toxic issue. So it's not presented as the legal claim of hostile work environment, but it could down the road fall into that category.
Can I follow up on?
Yes, sir.
Are there any city policies that define toxic work environments and how you're supposed to come back and forth with employees?
I'm not aware of any policy that addresses the toxic work environment. Hostile work environment is a legal claim. This is just not that right now.
Any other questions? All right. Any motion with regard to allegation number four?
Mr. Chairman, in light of recommendations in the report, I move allegation four of the advanced discharge on the report.
Second. Any discussion? Any discussion? Any public comment in regard to allegation number four that was just discussed? Seeing no public comment, all those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Allegation number five.
Allegation number five is objectivity. It was alleged that Ms. Green did not maintain the objectivity and impartiality required of her position. The specific allegations include, but are not limited to, the following. There are three paragraphs to support proposition. Conclusion on allegation five. The greater weight of the evidence indicates that Ms. Green made recommendations to city departments and agencies that they should, quote, get rid of, end quote, or terminate particular employees even before an investigation was completed. The fact that both current and former OIG employees corroborated these practices carries substantial weight with regards to this issue. OGC finds that allegation 5 is substantiated. Allegation 5 does not fall within the JHRC's jurisdiction, Thus, it renders no conclusion.
Any questions for the tallies, Jeremy?
This one troubled me a lot. But I think this may be a question for Ms. Goodman. Based on this one in particular, does this mean that either you or future IG would have to look at the reports that she issued that may have involved some of these circumstances?
Through the chair, what we are looking at is cases that are currently opened and making determinations whether we need to go back, and I'm going to discuss in my report of whether there should have been whistleblowers. We'll look at whether or not we need to continue on with these cases or close them, which we've been subsequently doing. There's been not a whole lot of cases issued under IG Green. Certainly we can look at whether there's a question of conclusion of fact. Not sure that hopefully would be an issue. We've not received any complaints I know of, but I will certainly check.
And do you think you have a full picture as to the circumstances in which that happened?
Full picture of the chair.
Do you have a full picture in the instances in which that actually happened?
I have a pretty good picture now of everything that was opened currently in the workload. We've not gone from closed cases or correspondences, but I have a very good picture of everything that was opened currently in the last 3 weeks and before. I have a clear picture on that.
Thank you.
Through the chair, if I could just a point of clarification, I just want to make sure that the committee understands that we did not hear any allegations that any findings of IG reports were incorrect. I just want to make sure that that was not presented to us on any level, and I don't want there to be any misunderstanding about that.
Oh, no, I just, it was based on particularly what the assessor had said, and it just seems something that definitely needed some level of oversight to go back and look at it, just from an objective.
Through the chair, I'll, after this is over, I'm happy to go over the report and kind of operationally tell you what I see.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I also have a question for Ms. Goodman. Are there circumstances, given your expertise as an IG, are there circumstances where the nature of the investigation before conclusion would warrant some suggestion to an entity from the IG that an action be taken related to an employee in order to prevent further?
Through the chair, traditionally, inspector generals do not get involved in the actual recommendation of what the corrective action would be. That's an impairment. We leave that to management, so that would not be a recommended practice at all. And in fact, it puts the IG in a very difficult situation because we don't know the personnel rules when it comes to equity on how you treat like with like discipline. So that would not be something that the traditional IGs get involved with.
Can I refine it a little bit?
Absolutely.
So if a city organization or city entity has in its organizational chart an appointed employee, and the inspector general, through the process of beginning an investigation of a complaint, finds activity that they think may rise to criminal or very severe fraud, waste, or abuse, but the appointed organization has no knowledge of the nature of the investigation, it would be best practice to leave the employee in place with the management structure having no knowledge of the potential additional harm, or would the IG inform? I'm trying to understand, given your experience.
Through the chair, it depends. Every situation depends, because if you have a criminal case, then we coordinate with law enforcement and the state attorney, which will have a protocol back in place on how that's done. So it truly depends on who gets notified and at what point. There's a process, but it depends on the circumstances.
So how would, Mr. Teal, in light of that, how would number one, potentially two and three, be impacted by the potential of an inspector general to see, through the nature of their investigation, enough probable cause, if you will, or enough concern about what they're learning about employee X's activities to then, before the conclusion of the investigation, suggest an action to a management structure?
Through the chair, so what I'm hearing is that you're looking for a bright line.
Well, I'm looking for, this one in particular has elements to it
where I can understand the argument of a motivation behind it being actually legitimate and not inappropriate, but I don't know all of the intricacies of the law related to the Inspector General or the Inspector General's best practices based on accreditation.
Right. So this is, so in essence what we're getting at is we're getting at the general role of an Inspector General, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. And, from what I'm hearing is, from what Ms. Goodness is saying, is that it's a case-by-case determination. From a legal perspective, as a lawyer, we can only breach attorney-client confidentiality if there's an immediate danger to somebody's about to get killed kind of thing. I would imagine that in the IG world, there is a similar bright line as to if we see this, then, we have an obligation to report that to management or take extraordinary steps. But the general practice is leave those types of decisions to management. We are reporting on what we're seeing, but it's up to management to decide what the next steps are going forward. Ms. Goodman, I don't know if you want to.
Through the chair. So first of all, I don't have the report, so I'm at a disadvantage. I don't want to know what's in the report. I'm keeping myself separate from this whole situation, leaving it to general counsel. So I'm not really sure what you're referring to, but in best practice, as far as, and I'm trying to understand because I don't know where you're all with this report, is if you're talking about corrective action, if something happens, then we say take appropriate corrective action. If we have a specific policy or internal control, we will give guidance as to a recommended internal control that would fix it. But when you're talking about if something is an emergency or something's happening, then yes, we try to notify the mayor or city, whoever can fix the problem. We don't let a safety issue continue on and not notify someone. So there's protocols in place, and again, I'm at a disadvantage because I don't know what you all are reading, but obviously, its best practice is ensuring that there's safety, that there's things moving timely, because we have people's livelihoods in their hands. And so we have to react based on that. I'm at a disadvantage, so I don't know exactly what you're referring to, because I don't have any knowledge what's in that report.
Mr. Chairman, would it be helpful for you all to hear kind of what the witnesses were telling us that kind of led to these conclusions?
Sure, it seems that the committee does have any questions. I think that would be helpful.
Thank you, through the chair. So I think if I'm understanding committee member Hughes's question, it's my understanding that there is an exception to the rule that Ms. Goodman is discussing. If there's a situation that the IG becomes aware of that's causing harm to the city, an employee is embezzling money or is planning to shoot someone at City Hall, something like that, then they are permitted to go and say, you need to do something about this employee. I think what Ms. Goodman is describing is, in general, if you find that an employee, sexually harassed someone else, you're not supposed to, in best practice, make a disciplinary recommendation. You're supposed to report those facts to management and let them decide. So I do think there's a distinction there. To be clear, the testimony that we received was not about the emergency type of situation where there's harm being caused to the city and the city needs to be alerted to take action. It was more of, I would say, the lower level situations. A few of the people that we interviewed went so far as to say Ms. Green would make comments about someone needing to go before even completing interviews. So we're talking about very early on and before there would be any indication really of any substantial harm. I don't know if that helps you understand.
I get it. I can tell you. Perhaps I have a different perspective because the circumstance of this one, I've actually had some experience with it, including with the Inspector General. An example being, it took the office, I think nearly a year or just over a year, to complete a report on a member, an appointed director. But the nature of that director's ongoing issues, if you will, with a subordinate, she had obviously found a substantial amount of evidence that that wasn't in fact happening and made a recommendation to admin leave or to suggest admin leave or some action by this office or my office because of the potential exposure of that director and that employee remaining in place. And no one in any other aspect of employee law suggested that was inappropriate or otherwise. So the report was not concluded, but action was suggested, so that's what I'm trying to understand.
Through the chair, in the IG world, when you get allegations against somebody, it's, well, I always say it's just as important to clear someone as it is to say they did something wrong. But from an inspector general, it's extraordinarily important that you move these cases. And obviously, this, you know, based on what I'm seeing in the office, things were not moving as timely as they should have. So we were keeping people in limbo, which keeps management in limbo of whether they can remove someone, whether they should put them in a different location. So due diligence must be done by the IG to move these quickly. When you have situations where there, as was described before, in an emergency situation, you need to remove someone, the IG can go to the head of whomever, the mayor or whoever, and say, we have a situation, this is what, you know, what we're seeing, go forth and do what you need to do. Law enforcement may be involved, and law enforcement may tell you, you know, there's a threat, we need to remove the situation. So that can occur. If you have something that's taking a long time because there's a lot of thorns and complications, then sometimes the decision is, we need to go and let you know this is continuing. A lot of it happens when it's criminal. This is continuing. We've confirmed with law enforcement or with the state attorney's office it won't impact it. We go to the mayor's office and say, we're still working on this, but this is what we can tell you, and perhaps maybe to remove that person is your choice to a different location until it can be done. We can tell you the threat, so to speak, if there's a serious threat. But again, there's this balance there. So if you, the key I think here is things need to move, and cases should be done sooner so you're not having these issues.
I get it. The timeliness of the reports aside, that deals with some efficiency and some other guidelines that you have as an IG.
And fairness.
I understand. But to separate that from whatever was causing the protracted process of the investigations and the resolution to a report or to a final spot. While it was in motion, it is not necessarily appropriate to, and this reads as make disciplinary recommendations, which ultimately saying, hey, employee X, who I'm looking at and have not concluded the full investigation yet, but I have a good, my team have, you're figuring a note, but you just said that there are certain circumstances.
There are urgent circumstances,
right,
perhaps, but again, you have, and an IG has to have all the facts and work papers documented before they issue a report. The key is to issue a report and issue corrective actions. Based on that is when management acts. If there's some urgent issue that's pending that causes, you know, friction or causes the media or whatever, then we have to take this by what I'm saying, a case by case basis, that can we disclose something to at least, you know, management to know something. But for the most part, IGs have to stay focused on the facts, they have to have conclusions, and they can't make recommendations until that process is complete.
But the nature of this allegation, which would potentially be advanced as a charge, is not about the timeliness of the work product to the final disposition. It is about what's happening prior to the final disposition. If and potentially it's foreshadowing. But I'm not talking about the timeliness and efficiency. Understand that completely. And I'm not, can't be in the camp that was always a big concern about the timeliness of reports, say it that way. However, regardless of the timeliness report, the nature of this potential specific allegation is that interim time during the investigation, recommendations or conversations outside of the investigation were in some level inappropriate and unacceptable. And I just want to fully understand if there are not certain circumstances and if that might explain this part of the allegation.
Mr. Chair, may I jump in just with a comment?
Yes, ma'am.
I think the difference here is that what's being referred to, at least in paragraph one, is disciplinary recommendations. And if you're making a disciplinary recommendation before a conclusion has been found in the investigation, that is inappropriate. I think what maybe Mr. Hughes is referring to is a recommendation to a supervisor. You need to be aware of these allegations. You may choose to do something about that based upon the allegations. So to me, it's a difference between an actual disciplinary recommendation, which is not appropriate before the investigation is concluded, versus these are the allegations. You may choose to react to that now if you want to as the direct supervisor. Is that, correct?
That's pretty much it in a nutshell, because of the fact that the decision to put somebody on administrative leave is not a disciplinary action. That's just removing them from the situation so that an investigation can occur. And I think that that's the distinction is that, you know, what was relayed to us during the interviews was that she was making recommendations for disciplinary actions, final, how are you going to punish this person, before the investigation was concluded. I think
right, and the reality is, whether it's appropriate to make that disciplinary recommendation or not by the IG, it shouldn't take place until the investigation is actually concluded. And that's the issue here, is she was actually allegedly making that disciplinary recommendation before she was able to come to a conclusion.
Not to belabor it, but I would point out that each of these previous allegations, before we move to the charge, for the sub discussion of, was there workplace training? Was there legal guidance? So that's why I was asking the question, which is about, first, you've answered part of my question, which is about the nature of what we define as disciplinary action in that part of the allegation. And secondly, the very specific, and I heard there are some conditions under which an inspector general can discuss with an organization outside of the investigation certain elements of the investigation before a conclusion is arrived at, if there is an urgent need, which is a bit nebulous.
That's true, but it's under exceptional circumstances. To answer your earlier question about training, this is all part of her certification training. She is certified as an inspector general, and all of that, they get into stay in your lane, you know, what's your lane. I think this is the part where, we've had a learning curve too in terms of exactly what inspector generals do, you know, what are their limits, what's their role. For this particular one, this was more of a professional standards. Does she maintain the requirements based upon her profession? There were examples, and you know, one and two, three stands on its own, paragraph three, but one and two, you know, were examples of where she would, in instances, make those recommendations about final disciplinary actions, which calls into question the unbiased nature of the office. I think that that's a bigger issue as well, is, you know, that we're not talking about any general employee, we're talking about the inspector general. And as a person who investigates other places for these types of activities, keeping your own name clean, is important. And that's why these standards should be strictly adhered to, especially if you are a certified, accredited inspector general.
And that was going to be my next question, because I really do look at IGs as the white hat in the room, that they should always be that white hat. There was a comment here that I guess you basically answered, based on her response to the allegation, is there a standard that IGs are aware of that defines that bright line, so that way there won't be a contention in the future that that line doesn't exist, because that's what she's claiming.
Through the chair, over and over again, the standards, whether they're Green Book standards, Silver Books, every book from federal government, state government, independence, objectivity, fairness, accountability, integrity is constant in the work we do. We are fact finders.
Any other questions?
So with the clarification, there may be circumstances where an IG may need to notify the agency so they can have some information so they can make a determination whether someone should be put on administrative leave. Putting that aside, do we have any motions related to allegation number five?
Mr. Chairman, I move allegation.
Yes, sir.
All right, any discussion?
So I just want to clarify that we're making it charge five.
Sorry, charge five.
That's okay. I just, in keeping with how Mr. Hughes' motions previously were reading it, might just clarify it for the record. Thank you.
Charge five.
Yeah.
Any public comments? If there's no discussion amongst the committee with regard to allegation number five, I do not see any public comment. All right. All those in favor with regard to allegation number five?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, allegation five. Motion passes, allegation five becomes charge five. All right, allegation number six.
Allegation number six, inappropriate relationship with a subordinate. It was alleged that Ms. Green had an inappropriate relationship with a former subordinate employee while that person was still employed. Specific allegations included but are not limited to the following. There are eight paragraphs to support response to that allegation. Conclusion on allegation six. The greater weight of the evidence supports a finding that Ms. Green's relationship with the former DOI, which is the Director of Investigations, was inappropriate. While there is no evidence that Ms. Green and the former DOI ever had sexual relations, there is substantial evidence that the relationship went far beyond the boundaries of a professional relationship. The former DOI's own statement was particularly informative on this issue, including his admission that he kissed Ms. Green on three separate occasions. The former DOI did admit that Ms. Green did not want to be kissed, but the evidence shows that Ms. Green continued to socialize with the former DOI one-on-one after he had kissed her multiple times or had tried to kiss her and after he had told her about his romantic feelings. The relationship between Ms. Green and the former DOI was not appropriate given the fact that Ms. Green was the former DOI's direct supervisor and there was an unfair power dynamic between the parties. The OGC finds that allegation six is substantiated. JHRC finds that the conduct described in allegation six is substantiated and contributed to the hostile work environment discussed in allegation one.
Question regarding allegation number six, again.
Do you know the time frame in which this allegedly happened? Matter of point to this.
Through the chair, this would have happened over a period of years, leading up to the subordinate employee's resignation in early 2020.
So this would have occurred. The only reason why I mentioned that, not to make a point of irony, but this one threw me for a little bit because she issued a report during that period that opined about a similar situation at a city agency. So I didn't know whether or not that went into the thinking as to how you substantiated some of the allegations. Not to say it was a direct link, but in terms of the frame of mind.
Right, so through the chair, all of our findings in here were just on the facts that were presented to us. We did not look at what work she was substantively doing at the time.
Any other questions? Any motions?
Mr. Chairman, I move allegation six be converted to charge six. Second motion.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion with regard to allegation number six becoming charge six? All right. Seeing none, do we have any public comment on allegation number six? Not see any public comment. All right. Take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes and allegation number six will become charge six.
Allegation number seven. Mismanagement / violation of city policy and state law. It was alleged that Ms. Green exhibited poor judgment and neglect in managing the Office of Inspector General, including participating in or sanctioning behavior that violates city policy and state law. specific allegations included but are not limited to the following. There are seven paragraphs in response to that. Conclusions on allegation seven. The greater weight of the evidence shows clear and significant mismanagement of the OIG by Ms. Green. The evidence also shows a likelihood that city policies and state laws were violated. At a minimum, Ms. Green's procedures circumvented public records requirements created by Florida law. The fact that an independent IG accreditation assessor found significant indicators of mismanagement and violations of the IG manual and accreditation standards is substantial. OIG finds that allegation 7, I'm sorry, OGC finds that allegation 7 is substantiated. Allegation 7 does not fall within the JHRC's jurisdiction, thus it renders no conclusion.
All right, any questions related to allegation 7? And then I would ask the committee, this may be an appropriate time to hear from Ms. Goodman, since the report that was created does specifically reference allegation 7, but we'll leave that up to the committee. Do you want to do that at the end or no?
That was a... I'll go with where the committee is, but I had a, that was one of my specific questions, particularly the circumvented public record requirements. I was just curious to see what that standard is.
Through the chair, I'll focus in on that since you're dealing with allegations. We can do the remainder later if you'd like. Couple things. I asked, because I wanted an independent look as well as my own, which I come with over 14 years of experience in, to make sure I was seeing things the way was consistent with the standards. So I asked an assessor who actually did the actual initial assessment here in Jacksonville to come and take a look and see where they are 1 year later. Both I and she came up with independent conclusions that there were certain elements of the office that were put in material support, for example, or they were left open for years on end in correspondences. There does appear, and even staff indicating to me that there does appear to be a misunderstanding or a vagrant violation of the public records law. By leaving things open under the law, yes, they're protected until concluded, but public records law is really, in the IG world, about when you have an investigation, you want a clean fact-finding investigation, so you don't want to spill it out into the news, so to speak. The subject deserves that. You're innocent until proven otherwise. So we try very hard to protect the work papers and the investigations while they're open. But once they're closed, they need to be public, with the exception of whistleblower information, things like that. There are certain redactions that happen. IT world, protect the government for those things. There appears to be that these things were left open for years on end, and because they're in, I believe, IG Green's mind, that she was able to not have them public disclosed if somebody requested them. There are so many, and you saw from my report, that were left open for years on end, that does appear to be the appearance of maneuvering around the public records law. In addition to protect law enforcement cases, there's a way to do that. There's an official way to do it. It's in writing. There's a protocol in play. But in this situation, things were done verbally, and then things were left open and put, in a couple of situations, put an investigator number to it. But they had no, when talking to the staff, there was no future report. There's no corrective action that's going to be done. So that's not the way you do it. So there is concern that some of the way the office was functioning was in a way to keep things open so they wouldn't become public records.
And based on that particular, since it's cited in allegation 7, do we have enough evidence within this report and the testimony to substantiate her intent?
So, through the chair, I don't know that there's clear evidence of intent, but I don't think that intent is required. You violate, unfortunately. Ms. Green didn't sit down and say, yes, I did all of this on purpose for this reason. No.
Okay. And then my other question, not saying it's number 5, but in the substance of it, Is it written anywhere? Is it just understood what policies apply to OIG or the city or both? Or this may be a basic question, but I just...
No, through the chair. So the IG has the OIG has their own policy manual. In that manual, it includes a section that says all city policies apply to OIG unless the OIG incorporates a more strict or more stringent policy on point. So there are a handful of policies that the OIG has done that for, but the remainder of city policies would apply.
So that would go directly to her having to have known that, particularly when she responded to that.
Right. And just a point of clarification on the public records issue, in addition to what Ms. Goodman discussed, we did hear testimony from several employees regarding instructions not to maintain drafts, which specifically for auditors is problematic, not really for everyone. So, I mean, again, not proof of intent, but, I mean, there were clear instructions given to not do that. Drafts that would otherwise be public records.
So... can I ask everyone on the committee whether they have read the IG accreditation assessor's report? And would it be accurate, Ms. Goodman, that that would be available to the public at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So obviously the public is interested in the content of that report that we've seen.
Correct. And to note, she was looking specifically at just where they were snapshot a year later with the instruction of, we want to make sure, you know, we fix what needs to be fixed before the three-year reaccreditation. And just a real quick, accreditation is fairly simple. It's writing a manual. It's, are you following that manual, is where this came into play.
Any other questions in the committee with regard to evaluation number 7? Questions? Any motions?
I would move, Mr. Chairman, allegation 7 be advanced as charge number 7.
Second. Any discussion? Any discussion on the committee? Any public comment with regard to allegation number 7? See no public comment. All right, moving on to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Allegation number 7 will become charge number 7.
Allegation 8, attempts to influence testimony of investigation witnesses. It was alleged that Ms. Green attempted to manipulate an OIG employee into making particular statements to OGC as part of its investigation, and that Ms. Green's boyfriend made threatening comments to the same employee via text message. Specific allegations include, but are not limited to, the following. There are 6 enumerated paragraphs in response to that. Conclusions on allegation 8. The evidence shows that Ms. Green's boyfriend contacted an OIG employee and made inappropriate comments and threats. OGC was unable to determine whether the messages were sent at Ms. Green's direction or whether Ms. Green knew about them at all. The alleged comments Ms. Green made to the supervisor are consistent with the substance of Ms. Green's testimony regarding her own responsibility for the decisions made about the analyst. Ms. Green made several comments deflecting the responsibility for the decisions away from herself and onto the supervisor. For example, Ms. Green testified repeatedly that all of the decisions about the analyst had been made by her supervisor, and that Ms. Green had simply approved them. Ms. Green said, quote, "So going back to the week when the supervisor came to me and asked about, you know, like we sat down, we both collectively came to the decision that maybe there wasn't enough work to do and we couldn't continue to do things to do with the schedule," end quote, to find things to do with the schedule, end quote. Later, Ms. Green testified, quote, "Yes, and the supervisor was the one that said, I can't keep up with the projects." We don't have enough work to create for her, end quote. However, when asked directly if something had been Ms. Green's idea or the supervisor's, Ms. Green admitted she may have actually been the one to bring it up herself. Question. So you said when the supervisor got back from leave, she kind of approached you about the issues with the analyst. Answer, not kind of. She approached me within the first week of coming back, yes. question. And so when she came back, you never said to her, hey, we've got to get this handled. You've got to handle the analyst's work from home. This isn't working. The answer, I may have said I had a lot of difficulty trying to manage the schedule. You'll have to work through it because you're the supervisor. These comments are substantively similar to the comments Ms. Green allegedly made to influence the supervisor's testimony. Based on the greater weight of the evidence, OGC finds that Allegation 8 is substantiated. Allegation 8 does not fall within the JHRC's jurisdiction, thus it renders no conclusion.
Question is it to Allegation number 8? I do have a question. Did we determine how Ms. Green's boyfriend obtained the employee's telephone number?
Through the chair, yes, they had texted previously about the boyfriend attending a birthday celebration at the office for Ms. Green, so they had texted previously about that specific situation.
Another question?
Actually, yes. Yeah, I want to clarify on that. So, obtaining the employees, the outside non-employee boyfriend getting the employee's text number, phone number for texting was initiated through an office group. Is that right?
So I don't know 100% the facts, but basically they were going to have a birthday celebration for Ms. Green at the office, and the employee was texting with her boyfriend so that he could participate. There were subsequent messages to that about other work-related things, dropping items for an employee's baby shower, things like that.
Yeah.
There was no issue with that, but the tone and the content changed as you saw in the report.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Any motions?
Mr. Chairman, I move Allegation 8 to be advanced as Charge 8.
All right, any discussion? Discussion on the committee, any public comment related to Allegation number 8? Seeing no public comment, moving on to vote, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Allegation 8 shall become charge number 8. All right, Allegation 9.
Allegation 9 is credibility. It was alleged that Ms. Green has not been fully credible or forthcoming over the course of the investigation. Specific allegations included but not limited to the following. There are three enumerated paragraphs and very lengthy evidence in support of the allegations in response to that. The conclusion on allegation number 9. The great weight of the evidence shows that Ms. Green provided inconsistent and contradictory statements during her interview. The evidence also shows that some critical answers changed following an opportunity to confer with her attorney. Additionally, the evidence shows that during her interview, Ms. Green made the types of comments that the complaints alleged she made in the workplace. OGC finds that Allegation 9 is substantiated. Allegation 9 does not fall within the JHRC's jurisdiction, thus it renders no conclusion.
Yes, sir.
Back through the chair. Can you kind of just, because we voted to ask her to participate in the interview, can you kind of describe how the interview went, like what the setting was? Because the way it kind of happened, that's kind of described, made me ask that question.
Right. So through the chair, Ms. Green is represented by outside counsel. We spent a lot of time attempting to coordinate an interview through her attorney. It was challenging initially to find a time, and originally our set of three date options expired. She did make herself available later on in that week on the 10th, and so obviously we moved what we needed to move to get it done. Her attorney, just broadly speaking, objected to our ability to interview her and did put his objections on the record at the beginning of the interview. Ms. Green was outside of the direction of her counsel. Ms. Green was very cooperative. She was not combative. She did her best to answer my questions. And we told her multiple times how appreciative we were of that, because obviously it helps complete our factual investigation. Her attorney, there were three or four times in the interview that we had some challenges, but for the most part, Ms. Green was very cooperative.
And my guess was everybody in person? Was any, I think he lives in another city. I just want to ask if anybody was by Zoom or if everybody was in person.
Yeah, so Judge, yes, everyone was in person. Everyone attended in person. We did have a court reporter, and you should have a copy of that transcript as well.
Questions? I just know that lawyers can be difficult.
Not wrong.
All right. Seeing no further questions from the committee, any motions with regard to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move allegation 9 be against this charge number 9 after the work of the
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. See no discussion. Do we have any public comment on allegation number 9 before we vote? Do not see any public comment. So moving on to vote with allegation number 9. All those in favor? All those opposed? Seeing none. Allegation 9. Motion passes. Allegation 9 will become charge number 9 as part of the document. Mr. Teal, I guess we've moving on to, want some direction but for the grounds of removal. Obviously, you've already outlined there are four specific things, which are neglect of duty, abuse of power, discrimination, and ethical misconduct, which are set forth in particular with regard to OIG and the removal. Would it make sense that we go through each of these to also vote whether we find one of the four, two of the four, three of the four, none of the four?
To the chair, yeah, that would make sense. What we did is that we attached as the final pages of the report grounds for removal as well as a legal definition where we could for the various things, neglect of duty, that sort of thing. It may be challenging to stick a label on each one of the allegations because there's probably bleed over, between, one, for example, one of the allegations might have, might touch on two or three or even all four of the grounds for removal. So that might be challenging to do is to say, okay, what for the grounds of neglect of duty, these are the allegations that support that. It's probably, in essence, keeping in mind of what your role is in this process is to decide, are there grounds? And then when it comes to, the actual removal, then, that's at the next step before City Council. That's probably where that more in-depth discussion will happen. But your control of the committee is in control of how you want that direction to go forward or what you need in order to be able to, in essence, substantiate. Now, what I would probably recommend is next step would be to take one final motion that the counts that were approved by the committee, those be forwarded or be part of the official charging document and grant you the authority to sign that on behalf of the committee, finalize and sign that, and then transmit that. And then that will, in essence, procedurally tie up all the loose ends as far as the committee work.
Sure. Anybody have questions related to that discussion? Does that make sense to everyone?
Yes, sir. I would maybe am looking at the clock and contemplating efficiency, but these four criteria have been a part of every meeting we've had to date related to the complaints. I'm very familiar with them, I think, because of the committee. We understand them. At some point, they're part of the public record. They sort of already are given earlier discussions. I think, in light of the unanimous votes on all nine charges, I think it's safe to say the totality and substantiation by the investigation of those allegations that led us to make the charges and our good understanding of these four criteria through previous meetings and this one. I would be prepared to make a motion, but I don't want to interfere with any other committee members' process. Then I would move, in light of the fact that the 9 allegations have been advanced as charges, and our understanding of the criteria of all the 4 criteria listed for grounds of removal, that we advance these charges to the IG as grounds for removal for the next stage of our due process, and we can give our chairman the authority to communicate that with Ms. Green in her turn.
That's a clarifying question. Within that motion, does that include, even though we're not specifically delineating that, that there had been sufficient evidence set forth to meet the criteria in 1 through 4, neglect of duty, abuse of power, discrimination, and ethical misconduct?
Do I believe every one of the charges checks all 4 of the grounds and boxes?
No, it
yeah, as a whole. Yeah, as in total, the totality of the 9 charges and the guidance of the 4 grounds for removal, if that is a motion for advancing the charges as grounds for removal, giving you the authority.
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, is it part of your motion that the 9 charges, let me back up, that the neglect of duty, abuse of power, authority, discrimination, and ethical misconduct, each of those 4 has been demonstrated through the 9 charges?
Well said. Better said than I, and so much for my swing and efficiency. I'll second the motion.
All right. Any discussion on this? Okay, we do have a request to speak card from Mr. Nooney.
Well, just a point of order. You know, it's like this is agenda item.
Sir.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm not sure if you want to speak now or not. So I
think, well, that's what I want. Yeah, it's not. I submitted a speaker card for agenda item 9.
Oh,
after
I'm sorry.
The business.
We'll get to you. All right. Any other public comment specifically related to the motion that is being heard right now? Seeing no public comment, we'll move on to the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes. All right. Have we covered C? We already have. I guess now we've done with Mr. Manning, unless there's anything else. Other business?
Actually, I think we still have Ms. Goodman to go over.
Oh, Ms. Goodman. Yeah, you can briefly go over the report. Anything briefly?
Yes, Chair.
Just because it's
late in the day.
That's the whole reason.
Hopefully the report speaks for itself, but the first thing I want to do is commend the staff. They have been energetic. They have worked very hard this last few weeks. I think I put them through the ringer. We really... there's a commitment to get this office back on track and do as the standards require, which is to add impact, add value, enhance the public trust. And so I just want to commend them for all their hard work they're doing. We have a few, the report speaks for itself. The biggest thing now is we're finishing up performance evaluations, and most importantly, the annual report, which we will come back to you in January to present the annual report as best as I can. We were definitely put under some very quick timelines to get audit out. But the good news is we're fixing things. I found that both the investigative systems is not working the way it's supposed to be, which will hold them accountable. They're excited about it. They didn't realize what it could do. So there's a lot of energy in the air. On the audit side, we're working with my partners in the state IG's office to get an automated audit system, so they can now have an automated way to track work papers. We've decided we're going to use Redbook standards in the auditing world. So basically, dotting I's, crossing T's, and getting us where we need to be. So excitement here from that. I'm happy to leave it for now. So thank you.
All
Any specific questions? Yes, yes, sir.
No, that's good.
Anyone else? All right, public comment?
I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
You had indicated earlier in the process about with the general counsel's investigative report becomes public record. Is that triggered by when the complaint is and a copy is sent to Ms. Green or received by Ms. Green?
To the chair, to Mr. Cofer, the under Chapter 119, it says that it is no longer confidential and exempt once the individual has been notified of the in writing, and that can be either hand receipt or mailing. And so it's not necessarily that they've actually received it; it's complete upon mailing.
That would be sent to our attorney.
It will be, yes, sir.
So, what is the next step after this?
So, next step is, you have the best of interest in this. So, the next step is for us to sit down with you and to decide how you would like this to be structured. After the letter goes out and she's notified, then the next step would be for us to sit down with you. Hang on. Once the letter goes out, I should have an outline. The next step is to schedule another meeting with you all.
With
the committee. Because she has an opportunity to respond to the charges that have been leveled against her. And so really we probably need to do that before we leave today, is to decide when that's going to happen. I will drop a key date to you all, which is in the court case, to be able to get this, this part of the process resolved prior to January the 7th would be ideal.
Before that motion for the TRO.
I'm sorry?
Before the TRO.
You're correct.
For the record.
Those should be dismissed.
So, Mr. Teal, I guess the way that it would work is that we would get to hear, and then at that point we would make a decision after having heard whether to continue to push it to City Council or whether we say, hey, we're withdrawn, we're done with this now.
Correct.
Okay. I got it.
And perhaps that would involve us moving and signing on to a recommendation directly to City Council if it went to that side of the equation versus the line.
Correct. Yeah, that's because of the process in Chapter 602 of our ordinance code, which says that you all forward to the City Council. That would be the official step, is after she's had a chance to respond, you guys figure out what you want to send forward, if anything, and then that would go to the City Council.
Certainly makes sense from the process.
And your recommendation is that the meeting for that consideration happen, what date did you say, prior to?
Prior to January 7th.
There's no way she could. Sorry, no one breaks that. It's the date that we decide. She doesn't have to mutually agree to that date.
Correct. Obviously, you would have to factor in fairness. You wouldn't want to do it tomorrow, because she wouldn't have had an opportunity to prepare. So give her, an amount of time but a reasonable amount of time to be able to prepare.
Would the last week of December be?
Mr. Chairman, I was going to suggest the early week prior to that defined date that the General Counsel. I think holiday travel between Christmas and New Year would probably make it complicated for at least a couple of us.
Sure. Monday the 3rd, Tuesday the 4th, Wednesday the 5th, or Thursday the 6th.
So that's that. Mr. Chairman, we're shooting for that week, but we're not going to sit here and pick the day, right? Or try to.
I wouldn't mind trying to pick the date, so we have it once.
I'll make anything work.
Yeah, I think we should pick the date.
And through the chair to Council President Newby, that's a, it's a committee week, that week.
So how is the third for everybody?
I could give the third.
May I ask what time we're talking about? Monday the 3rd? I mean, while we're critical that week, I might be definitely important, and they might be taking me out today. Mr. Teal?
Monday the 3rd doesn't work for us. Sorry.
I'm good on the 5th or 6th.
Well, the 5th or 6th, I can do it.
The 6th is better for me. Yes, sir.
It's Monday the 3rd is the date of the motion to dismiss hearing. And so Ms. Green is actually also going to be tied up that day as well with her attorney.
The 6th.
In the afternoon, is that good for me?
Want to do 3 o'clock on the 6th?
Yes. Hey, I text my assistant very quickly.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to make sure nothing got set for me that afternoon. So you don't have small plates. And we're saying the afternoon of what?
3 p.m.
Or
we could adjust it. Twice, and with Carlo Miller,
meeting when she announced her retirement at the 3/26/2021 meeting, I asked, what happened to public participation? And she told me that it was OGC and the interpretation. So going forward, the only one that could fix it would be the Attorney General, the State of Florida, or the State Attorney of the Fourth Judicial Circuit. And hopefully it won't even have to go there. You know, we've got the president of this Jacksonville City Council. But it is just crushing to attempt to participate through the legislative process in the Jacksonville City Council legislative committee process and develop a card and then not be recognized. So, you know, I want to bring, and the reason I'm here, I just always feel that there's a pecking order. You know, the IG, you had some top shelf stuff. You really have to be screwing up pretty big time, in my opinion. And then you hopefully will work through, you know, the ethics. And then maybe, you know, through, you know, the city council or, and Jason, you know, I'm not throwing you under the bus. I know you're the new guy here. And, but, I haven't reached out to you yet. But I went to the lab. I can play you tapes where I'm attempting to try to speak before a vote is taken on any city ordinance and just being crushed. And so, that's.
You know, I'm not trying to crush you, but you have 30 seconds.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. You know? Listen, I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. I invite you all to attempt to go to a Jacksonville Legislative Committee process meeting and fill out a speaker card and see if you guys get recognized. But anyway, that's the reason I'm here. Let's restore public trust. And Jason, I'll accept any guidance, you know, whether it's the executive or legislative branch, how we can open up. And as it says here, enhancing the public trust in government. Thank you all for listening.
All right, any other comments from the public? Ms. Monroe, you can request them. All right, seeing no other business before this committee, we will adjourn the meeting.